Occupan, blow my mind. So all of you know by now what time it is. So let's get to it. First, I want to give you a little bit of trivia. So most of you probably recognize that nice little meaty piece with all the distortion on it. sort of a classic riff by a pretty classic artist person who's been around forever and a day and still doing music, and I think was recently honored with a Music Person of the Year award. And any music cares, whatever. But at any rate, writes some really awesome stuff. And while that song is normally played on a Les Paul, I was being a little frivolous and juiced the amp up a little bit and played it on an ASAT. So for those of you who don't know what that is, that stands for Alternative Strat Alternative Tele, which is a model of a G&L brand guitar, which I only became familiar with in the last couple of years, and I finally managed to find the model that I have. Actually, I have two of them. I like their guitars a lot. For those of you who don't know about G&L, the history is that the sort of the main culprit of that, George Fullerton and, of course, Leo Fender, which is what the G&L stands for, worked, as you know, for Fender because Leo Fender invented Fender. He was the Fender of Fender. And at some point in the 60s, he became ill, and so my understanding of the story is that he became ill and sold the Fender Corporation rights to CBS Television, who then proceeded to bastardize and terrorize and otherwise junctify a previously really well-known and uber-good guitar line. And since, as it turned out, Leo Fender wasn't on death's door, and I think was so appalled at what his company had become. He obviously couldn't, use the name because he sold the rights when he sold the company. So he and George Fullerton, a tech, got together and started G&L, as in George and Leo, guitars back in the day, and they're still going strong today, despite the death of Leo Fender several years ago. At any rate, nowadays G&L makes, I think, both American-made and foreign, schlepped out to foreign countries to put together, cut out, whatever. Which, I understand why people do that, but, to sound, and I don't mean to sound like a xenophobe or a racist or anything else, but caca fern-made guitars that were once made in America, goddammit, I just do not approve, and you find very few non-American-made guitars in my collection, and generally the ones that you will are those that have been schlepped over to foreign countries back in the 70s by Gretsch, who still continued to oversee their production and still put out very fine guitars, although now that Fender owns Gretsch, they have schlepped some of their stuff to another foreign country, which is not quite as well maintained in terms of their line, at least in my personal humble opinion. But they certainly are selling a lot of them and doing well, and I certainly wish them and anyone else who does that nothing but good luck. But you won't catch me buying any of those guitars in any way, shape, or form. I consider it a complete travesty when you have an American-made fine piece of instrument it gets schlepped off to some other country to be made because people are too daggum greedy, and that's essentially what it's come to because the cost of labor is so expensive over here. When the people can get it done a lot cheaper in other countries. But and again, it's not to say that I don't appreciate products from other countries, because there are certain products that I think other countries do extremely well on, automobiles being amongst them, and electronics in some regards being amongst them for other countries. But at any rate, I'm sort of rambling. So I apologize. And again, I mean that as no disrespect to anybody. It's just, you know, if you're going to make a Gibson guitar or a Fender guitar or a PRS guitar or whatever, and you start out in America and you make it in America, don't sell out and schlep out because you're a greedy son of a biscuit eater, okay? So today what I'm going to be doing, in addition to talking about this music trivia stuff, is this is going to be sort of a rant for me, because some folks over the course of the last couple of months have sent me some interesting articles that I've looked at, and in some cases had semi-coronaries over. So I've sort of accumulated a few of these topics, and I'm going to just bitch about them. So again, my apologies to people if you have no interest in hearing me bitch about certain psych disorders or certain people who we seem to like to eulogize after their death, even though many of us were calling them, you know, nefarious sons of biscuit eaters while they were alive. Just mystifies me. But at any rate, if you folks don't want to hear about all that, feel free to cut this thing off and go back to your daily grind. And thank you for listening as far as you have. And by the way, for those of you who don't know what a Les Paul is, it's, Gibson's hallmark Cadillac lines back in the day that was started by a guy named, guess what? That's right, Les Paul. Oh, my God. And that particular guitar also has a very interesting history. And in 2014, Gibson is releasing a bunch of interesting variations on their traditional guitars, including the Les Paul and the SG, which stands for special guitar. And I think they're doing it to the Les Paul Jr. as well, but I don't want to swear to that. But I do know I saw some press on the SGs and the Les Pauls, and so they're doing some interesting things to those guitars with the pickup configuration, the push-pull pots, and that sort of thing. So for you geek heads out there and nerd heads, musician types, take a look. They look like some interesting stuff. One of the ways that I was told that Gibson is cutting costs, by the way, and still maintaining an American presence with their guitars, is that they're, you know, cutting back and giving gig bags on some of their models instead of cases, because cases will, you know, save you money. And for those who don't need a nice fancy hard shell case, because you're just basically going to be strumming in your bedroom or whatever, that will save you several hundred dollars. Some of those cases are really, really pricey. In particular, some of the specialty cases that get made for both Gibson and Fender and some other independent luthiers like Mario. I forgot Mario's last name. It's MM, so I forget what his last name is, but he makes really good guitars. There's a side case that makes G&G, that's a specialty case manufacturer that makes cases for a lot of higher-end custom guitars, and those cases are uber pricey. They're very cool, but they're definitely uber pricey. So if any of you have seen any of the higher-end custom shop Fenders or Gibsons or whatever, they often come with the G&G case. So at any rate, that's Gibson's way of trying to save folks a little bit of money without having to schlep their manufacturing at other places. So woohoo to you, Gibson. Thanks for the thought. But for those purest of us, I always want to have a hard shell case for my guitars because, as most of you know, I'm compulsive as hell, and gig bags just don't cut it. And what really gets me is when manufacturers charge you an arm and a leg for their guitars or basses or whatever, and give you, you know, extra padded gig bags as sort of the pro forma out the door. I mean, if you're spending $4,000, $3,000, $2,000 on a guitar instrument, and they're giving you a gig bag, I don't care how nice the damn gig bag is, that's a slap in the face as far as I'm concerned. And in case you're wondering who I'm talking about, it's Hint, Hint, Nudge, Nudge, Warwick. Oh, did I mention them? Oh, my God. I was just amazed that you have to pay extra to get a hard shell case for a lot of their basses. And they make really good basses for the most part. The ones that are made in Germany, again, they have a line that's not made in Germany and yada, yada, yada. So, I don't want to go there. Same thing with Hofner, for those of you who remember back in the day, the old Beatle, so-called Beatle basses, the violin basses that Sir Paul McCartney is so famous for playing, although left-handed, albeit. Most of those basses, as you see in the music stores, are not made in Germany anymore. They're known as icons, Hofner icons, obviously because Paul McCartney is an icon, and that is the icon to whom they're referring. And they are definitely not made in the way that the ones in the 60s were. So it's just really a shame. And that sort of kind of leads me into my first topic that I'm going to talk about, which is a little topic that was reported in a Gallup poll that basically says, why life in America can literally drive you insane. Well, first of all, let me point out that insanity is a legal term. It is not a medical or psychological or psychiatric term. So, for those of you who think that insanity is a medical or psychological term, guess again, if you ever go into a court of law and do any forensic testimony in the court, and by the way, forensic doesn't mean talking to dead people, okay? It means of the court, right? So if those of us who do forensic work, doesn't mean we hang out in morgues or dig up dead bodies and do, rude, crude things with them. So, just FYI. So insanity is not a medical or psychological term. It is a legal term. But when used in its sort of colloquial, jargonistic, everyday kind of, my God, that makes you nuts, what the article basically says is that a Gallup poll done in June of last year, 2013, that we just left. By the way, Happy New Year for all of you, and I hope it's an awesome year for everybody, and I really mean that. Said that 70% of Americans either hate their jobs or have checked out of them. And it says life may or may not suck any more than it did a generation. And I'm reading verbatim, so these are not my words, although it sounds like something I would have written. Life may or may not suck any more than it did a generation ago, but our belief in progress, that's in quotes, has increased expectations that life should be more satisfying, resulting in mass disappointment. For many of us, society has become increasingly alienating, isolated, and insane, and earning a buck means more degrees. Yep, I can tell you that one. compliance, ass-kissing, boy, you got that right. Shit-eating, these are direct quotes, guys. And inauthenticity, what a great word that is. So we want to be a rebel. However, many of us feel hopeless about the possibility of our own escape from this oppression or that political activism can create social change. So many of us rebel by what is commonly called mental illness. Now, I would disagree with that, but at any rate, what I will say is they're absolutely right that in one regard, at least in my personal opinion, one regard, all this focus on better living has, I think, left us to forget what's really important to us, and most of us, get lost in the money and the cars and or whatever your thing is, sex, drugs, rock and roll, guitars in your closet, whatever. The truth is, particularly if you want a political job or one in an institution, you do have to do a lot of butt kissing. That is absolutely true. And you have to, as the old adage would say, eat crow and, do a lot of things you don't want to do and play the game. And to some degree, you have to do that in educational institutions as well, because much to my shock, surprise, and chagrin when I was in college back when dinosaurs ruled the earth, I had these stupid, Oxfordian, ideas of 1800s that people took you under their wing and sort of nurtured you and stuff and, guided you along and mentored you and, kicked your butt when they needed to, but were basically there to help you out and for you to get a degree. And I can absolutely tell you from personal experience and experience of a lot of my colleagues, that ain't true. People in education nowadays are even more so interested in getting their numbers up and making money. One of the colleges I was teaching for part-time for a while, basically, you know, said, you know, yeah, you know what, you're real smart and you do a really good job, but we had too many students bitch about you because you flunked them. Well, no, I didn't really flunk them. They flunked themselves because they were lazy asses and dumb asses and didn't want to be educated and didn't want to get off their complacency to do that nasty four-letter word work that you guys have heard me say so many times on these podcasts. That's right, work. They didn't want to do the nasty, obscene, four-letter word. Some of the students point blank told me that prior teachers had given them the answers to tests and the test questions beforehand and yada, 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 yada. And I mean, you know, if that works for you as a teacher, well, more power to you. But you will never be caught dead or alive or in a zombie state or in a vampiric state or any other state in any institution that I run or am a part of. I just consider that to be absolute an anathema to good sense and honor. And that's something we in America are completely and surely lacking in, is both good sense and honor, in my personal opinion, for the most part. And I think that's part of what this article is getting to. It's, you know, and part of it is we've been led to believe that we should, you know, love our job and, you know, be happy and, you know, be skinny and all this other kind of good stuff. And while I would certainly say being thinner and healthier, and you guys have heard me say this before, you know, eat properly and yada, yada, yada. If you look at the commercials we have on television, I mean, how many commercials do you see, you know, for good food? Most of the commercials you see, you know, are not for places that serve the highest quality stuff. And I'm not, you know, naming anybody, but I think you all know, you know, which ones about which I'm speaking. And actually, that's about 90% of the stuff you see on TV, because even the products that you see on TV, you know, half those products have all kinds of crap in them that are poisons for your body, preservatives and sugar, the most addictive drug and worst drug for your body on the frickin' planet, bar none. And I'm not exaggerating. I think I said this in a previous podcast, but you know sugar's a bad drug when Amsterdam, which most of you know is a city replete with, you know, liberalism and, you know, where marijuana can be smoked freely in some of the coffee houses and cafes, and where prostitution is legal and advertised, you know, by windows and folks, you know, in the windows advertising their wear. And I'm not slamming them. I'm just saying, you know, when you've got a place that's liberal and their major health official of the city says, we need to either ban sugar or put warning labels on it like we do cigarettes because it's the most dangerous drug in the world, you know it's bad, okay? Just saying. You know, so you see all these advertisements, all these products, and I mean, you know, and I saw one, you know, for one of these, you know, toaster products, you know, one of these like Toast'em dillies you put in, they're called by all kind of names, but, you know, they're like all these cutesy, very well-produced commercials with happy people eating tons of sugar and all kinds of crap. I mean, I was really happy when I saw that the federal government had decided to ban you know, trans fats. However, they haven't banned hydrogenated fats, which turn into trans fats and all kind of crap in your body when you eat them, and your body can't get rid of trans fats. It takes your body 4 days to get rid of 1 gram of trans fat. So, and hydrogenated fat, excuse me. So they haven't banned hydrogenated fats. I'm sorry, that was a misspeak. And it takes your body 4 days to get 1 gram of hydrogenated fat out of your body because it's a designer drug, just like methamphetamine or anything else. It's made in a lab. Why do they do that stuff? Haven't you asked yourself why the artificial vanilla and the artificial maple flavoring and extract and all is a lot cheaper than the real deal? Well, because it's synthesized in a lab, and it's cheaper to synthesize that crap in a lab than it is to extract it from the real deal stuff. So it is with hydrogenated fats. Right? So if it's hydrogenated palm oil or hydrogenated peanut oil or whatever, it's quicker to, you know, brew it up in a lab than it is to extract it from nature. But when you take away the natural aspect of it, literally from nature, that's where the word natural comes from, folks. In case you didn't know that, just, you know, FYI here. You introduce chemicals that sometimes the body can't use and in other cases are actually bad for your body, poisonous, toxins. So, you know, part of the reason that we in America are being, quote unquote, driven crazy by our day-to-day life is because we're buying, literally and belief-wise, the crap that they're showing on TV. You know, they hire, you know, people like me who are, you know, more commercial psychology folks and, you know, so, you know, as Dr. Goldman used to say, human social psychology. What a great teacher he was, by the way. I really love that guy. You know, we're learning how to sell stuff. You know, I'd walk a mile for a camel. I think I've mentioned this to you guys and gals out there in listen land before, but in case you don't know the author of that, right, that was John Botus Watson, as in J.B. Watson, the father of behaviorism, right? So when he got kicked out of one of the universities for stepping around with females being married, he was accused of quote-unquote moral turpitude, and his, you know, employment in the university was terminated because that kind of thing wasn't, you know, kosher. And he was essentially disgraced. And so one of the local tobacco companies, I think it was R.G. Reynolds, hired him to do, to see if he could, you know, come up with stuff to sell cigarettes. And he's the one that came up with the commercial, the byline, the tagline, "I'd walk a mile for a camel." Okay, so you can blame us psychology guys for all the marketing stuff, because now marketing psychology is big business, and some of these folks who are very successful know what you will buy and what you and I, what sells, you know, stuff for you and me, and they do research. Haven't you guys ever seen all this stuff that you see on a lot of you guys that are internet bloggers and internet users, which, you know, I do certainly look up stuff, you know, for education purposes on the internet and that sort of thing. And I certainly use it to chat with friends, chat format stuff. But, you know, you'll see hundreds of ads on those things. And sometimes if you belong to certain forums, like a guitar blog forum or something like that, which I belong to a couple of those, you know, and I know Kelsa, please, right? The guitar manufacturers and the pedal manufacturers and all will help pay for those things because they want to sell guitars and pedals and amps and whatever. And occasionally they'll offer you discounts on their products if you fill out, you know, an inventory or fill out some kind of, you know, questionnaire. Well, that's a form of marketing because they're going to take all that data that you put in there, you know, and they're going to turn it into ads on TV, radio, the internet, whatever, because their bottom line is money, right? And I'm not blaming them because I like money as well as anybody does, maybe better. But I'm not willing to sell people crappy shit in order to make money, nor am I willing to tell people that sugar is a good food for them to sell money, to sell, you know, more stock in my sugar corporation, which I don't own, and I wouldn't for that very reason. I just, you have to have a brain and a moral, and I think that's really sorely lacking in America. And part of the reason why life in America can drive you crazy is because we let it, and because we buy into all this crap that we see on TV. We should have bigger homes and live in better neighborhoods and date cuter guys or cuter gals or have, you know, more fluffy pets that, you know, get, you know, go to the pet salon and get frou-froued and all this kind of crap. You know, we believe that junk. And we see it on TV, and, you know, you don't see ugly, disgusting, and no offense to anybody when I say this, but you don't see fat and ugly, disgusting, disheveled-looking people on TV selling stuff, right? Especially expensive stuff. Or even, you know, the product that all these major manufacturers like Pillsbury or, you know, Nabisco or any of those guys, and I'm not slamming on those people because some of those folks make some really good products, but I'm saying, you see any of these advertisements, you see a happy family with, you know, kids and fun and laughing and playing with dogs or whatever, you don't see these disgusting people on TV that look like some of these, you know, trashy looking people that are on some of these shows that people like to watch. And that's another one of my big dillies. Oh my frickin' God. I mean, how can you watch a show, and I'm not going to call the name, but how can you watch a show about an overweight chick who's absolutely disgusting, and obviously you wouldn't look, you know, if you saw her in a grocery store, you would look and go, who is that fat fuck on, who the hell is that, and why isn't her mom putting her on a diet? Well, the reason her mom isn't putting her on a diet is her mom's fatter than she is. It's like, what the hell? You know, or who would want to watch a bunch of Georgia or South Carolina or, and I'm not slamming any of these states, guys, but a typical, quote unquote, stereotypical Southern redneck trailer trash person burping and belching and rubbing their beer belly and throwing beer cans, you know, across the trailer. I mean, you know, and that's essentially what you have on a, you know, show that was named after a Yankee state. And again, I'm not mentioning any names, but I think you all know what I'm talking about. You know, and it's just like, why do people want to see that crap? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's disgusting, in my personal opinion. It's like, are you kidding me? But other than those disgusting TV shows, which I just, oh my God, I couldn't watch them. When I saw the ads, I thought it was a joke, honestly. At any rate, when you see people trying to sell stuff on TV products, you don't see those kind of folks on those TV shows, right? even some of the motor oil commercials, you know, they're talking in, you know, very understandable English. You know, they're not talking redneckese, you know. And by the way, guys and gals, don't get pissed off at me, right? I'm not biased, right? I don't like stereotypes of any type, whether they're, you know, of whatever race, sex, creed, you know, rural, urban, whatever, right? And a patient of mine once said, you know, you're not racist or prejudiced in that regard. You just don't like, you don't like stereotypes regardless of their race, sex, creed, sexual preference, whatever. And you know what? That person was absolutely 199% right. Person was a smarty too, so go figure, right? And I like smarties, by the way. Have I mentioned that before? So part of the reason that this life in America is because we've given up our core. We've bought into the American dream, which is bigger cars and faster cars and more money in the bank and cuter chicks or guys or, you know, pet animals or, you know, zebras or whatever your thing is, you know, and more guitars and more amps and, you know, more sex and whatever. And because of that, we are you know, selling ourselves short, and we're killing ourselves in some cases literally to get these things that that we tell us we need to have to be happy. And we have forgotten our core. Now, yeah, do you have to do a little bit of butt kissing and a little bit of schmoozing to get what you want in almost any situation? Absolutely. Ultimately, in a perfect, completely moralistic, you know, totally cool world, should, quote unquote, anybody have to do that? Well, hell no. But, you know, we ain't living in heaven. We're not. This ain't the perfect world. And we have to do a little bit of that. But this is part of the reason why I don't work in institutions and why I don't run for office. Not I would get elected anyway, you know, or any of this other kind of crap, because I'm not a good butt kisser. I mean, I played hell just getting through college, even though you'd never know it because of all my degrees and certs and stuff. But I'm not a good butt kisser, as most of you probably know. And I call a spade, and if the spade doesn't like it, the spade can go shovel dirt for all I care. I don't really give two flying flips. And it really, political correctness, you guys first and gals have heard me say this before, political correctness is really another term for somebody who doesn't have the balls to say what they really mean. And that, thankfully, is something I don't have a problem with. My problem is knowing when to keep my mouth shut and not say those kind of things. Again, playing the game, right? And this is why I minimize my contact with organizations, because I don't play the game well. And most organizations want to punish you if you don't play the game well. And I don't like what I consider to be unwarranted punishment. I consider that to be prejudicial behavior, and I get pretty unhappy when that happens, and I usually voice my unhappiness, and I usually do something about it to the folks that are trying to do that to me. So this is why I will never run for public office, and I wouldn't get elected even if I did, and I don't, you know, I don't do full-time work in any university or setting or any organization, hospital, whatever. I might part-time do stuff. That's because I walk in, I do my thing, I walk out. Thank you very much. Good night. Where's my money? Thank you. You know, I don't play games well. And so if you want to have a saner, quote-unquote, life in America, get back to what's important. Get back to your core values. Give up these delusional notions of, you know, being the richest, cutest, whatever. Go back to taking care of yourself, working out, eating, resting, doing the basic stuff that you need to do to make yourself healthy, both physically and mentally, because you can't be mentally semi-healthy and physically not healthy, because the mind and body are inexorably intertwined. There is no way to get around it. You can't abuse the crap out of your body and not expect your brain to not react badly. You know? So you want to have a quote-unquote saner life in America? Do your own thing, stand your own ground, don't be crazy about it, quote unquote. But, you know, you want to be your own man, or you want to be your own woman or boss or whatever, then you don't want to run, you know, as David Crosby would say, you know, if you run, you know, don't try to get yourself elected. And if you do, you better cut your hair, right? And that really is his way of saying back in the day, you know, that you got to sell out to some degree and put on airs and be somebody you're not. If you get into public office, and he was right, and you know, that's true of anything. So you have to be your own person, and the way to do that is to disengage yourself from any higher expectations and not selling out yourself for a piece of false security. Right, and there's a musician who I really, really love that has a line in one of his songs. You know, will you sell your, will you sell your expertise, your knowledge, and your soul for a piece of false security in the land of dark and cold? Right. And he was right. And that's the question we all have to ask ourselves. Mark Stevens, by the way, one of my favorite acoustic artists. You know, he's saying, you know, what are you going to do when the fit hits the shan? You know, are you going to sell out? Are you going to sell out for a piece of false security, whether it's money or sex or fame or power or whatever? Because if you do that, you're never going to be happy. The only way anybody can be happy, truly happy, is if they're doing completely coherent and cognitively cognizant of themselves and living a completely life that completely reflects their own spiritual and emotional and cognitive belief systems. Because if you're not cognitive and awake and aware, and you're feeding your body crappy stuff, and you're doing a job that you just hate for the money, you're going to drive yourself to an early grave. I mean, literally, or at least deteriorate your health dramatically. So you want to remain more sane in America or any other place? I'm sure it's the same, you know, other places as well. Well, I'm not sure. I would imagine it is. Then, you know, get back to the basics and stop doing stupid shit, and you won't have to mess with it. Oh, so another person sent me an article that's kind of it's an article published by Dr. Marilyn Wedge, who wrote a book called, I assume it's a book called Suffer the Children. I haven't read the book. But anyway, it's evidently a book about ADHD and her disdain about all the medication that we give here in America, ADHD kids. And, you know, I have mixed feelings about that because obviously if you really do have ADHD, you need to have some biochemical assistance for your brain. But biochemistry doesn't always mean medication. You folks have heard me say on here before that most of the folks that I work with are managing their stuff holistically, so-called naturally, with herbs and diet and changing lifestyle habits and exercise and this kind of stuff. And you can have major impacts on the brain. Now, if you're not willing to do that nasty four-letter word work because that requires a boatload of effort, then yeah, pop a pill and do your thing. The article was called Why French Kids Don't Have ADHD. And it's really a little misleading because French kids do have ADHD. I've tested some of them, by the way. The problem, what the article really is referring to is that, in general, my impression on reading this article was that the French folks tend to see ADHD as more of a social, sort of a holistic view, a social interpersonal, you know, view that looks at lifestyle stuff and looking at changing your stuff, you know, changing your lifestyle and changing what you eat and changing the kind of food you eat, and it's a much more holistic approach. And I think that's awesome, right? You know, now the author, of course, is saying, oh, well, you know, they just don't pathologize it. And the implication I get from the article is that, you know, that we've over-pathologized this situation, and I would completely and totally disagree with Dr. Wedge on that. I think she's delusional, frankly. No offense when I say that. We certainly over-medicate people, and that's true whether it's depression or ADHD or any damn thing else in this country because we want the quick fix. And I do agree that I think it's much healthier, you know, what the article is saying is that, you know, that French the people prefer to look at a bunch of underlying factors, not just the brain, and they kind of minimize the brain part, and I have to disagree with them on that because we already know, and I'm sorry, but we have enough evidence to know that this thing is predominantly biochemical and wiring. So anybody who doesn't believe that in this day and age, in my personal opinion, is a moron or either hasn't read the facts and is a narcissist. So at any rate, it doesn't matter because what the French people are doing, evidently, according to this article, is they're changing nutritional systems, which is a number one thing they need to do. They're absolutely, 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 absolutely correct in that. And changing some of the social outlets in order to channel some of that energy. And I think that's a brilliant thing because one of the things I try to get my folks here, whether they're adults or kids with ADHD, is to engage in some activity that's going to maximize the hyper component, particularly if they have physical restlessness or whatever, or their brain's wandering and they're restless, right? Channel that energy. Don't try to stomp it. Channel it. You know, I joke with a lot of my patients that come in and see me, and, you know, they see the hair and the whole nine yards, and, you know, they've already been told from their referral person or persons, you know, if they've referred by somebody who knows me, you know, don't let him fool you. He's kind of weird, and, you know, don't let the hair scare you. And, you know, his language is a little funky and all, but, you know, he's really smart and he really gives a flip and yada, 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 yada. So it's always funny when people come into my office and they, you know, they see me in the waiting room, and, you know, if they have an adolescent with them or a young adult, you know, the kid, and I'm pathologizing anybody. I'm just, you know, being lazy in my terminology. So the kid, the identified patient, sees me come in, and it's like, whoa, you know, this guy's like different. He's not all like formal and stuff. And the parents oftentimes have this kind of look of, oh my God, this guy's not going to do therapy with my kid, is he? Holy shoes, who is this crazy man, right? So I always see the kid first and talk to the kid for an hour, 30 minutes to an hour, whatever, right? And then I sit the kid down to do some, you know, fill out some stuff for me. And then the parents are filling out stuff while I'm talking to the kids. So the second half, I bring the parents in, right? So the parents walk into my office and see all the crap on the wall, you know, and I've got just, you know, a boatload of these things on the wall. And you can see this look like, oh my God, thank God, he's just weird. You know, he's actually smart. He's just weird. Oh my God, thank you. It's like they're almost doing the cross, you know, crossing themselves sitting. It's just really funny to watch that as an observational person. You know, because I also have an amplifier in my office and a guitar, and so people walk in and they see the guitar and the amp, and of course, as I say, you know, the identified adolescent or young adult goes, cool, and the parents are like, oh shit, he's a rock and roller. So, you know, now they have all these misanthropic ideas that I'm a drug addict and I'm a weirdo. Well, the weirdo part's right, that I'm a drug addict, that I'm an iconoclast, and the iconoclast part's right, too, you know, and somehow I'm this troublemaking guy, and I'm only a troublemaker about half the time, guys, so cut me some slack, okay? Okay. But I don't do drugs, or and never have, as you guys have heard me say hundreds of times here. Negative drugs. Let me, because as you've heard me say before, biochemically, water is a drug. So I don't do bad drugs for the most part. You know, I don't do sugar. I don't do pot. I don't do alcohol. I've never been drunk. Yada yada yada. Anyway, but it's funny because one of the things I try to talk to these people about is, and I say to them, okay, so you see all the stuff on the wall, and the parents are like, uh huh, and their eyes are real big, and I go, all that is efficacious use of personal pathology, right? And the parents kind of look at me funny. I go, well, you know, you guys don't really know me that well, but let me just tell you right up front, you know, I'm a very perfectionistic kind of guy. I clinically have obsessive compulsive personality disorder, not OCD, OCPD, big difference, folks. And I've said that to you before on here. So if you don't remember, go listen to the podcast, or go look it up on, you know, some clinical book, or, you know, Google it or whatever, but it's a big difference. But at any rate, I'm basically a perfectionist who drives himself, if he doesn't watch it, and everybody else around me nuts if I'm not careful. And, you know, so rather than end up like my mom, giving myself multiple trans-ischemic attacks, which I'm not joking, which sadly she has done because she stresses herself out all the time, I've chosen to take my perfectionism and most of the time, not all the time, because I'm not God, I mess up, channel it into ways that are beneficial to me. And one of the ways that I do that is by getting more degrees, certifications, and, you know, licenses, and all, you know, all this kind of good stuff, because I'm expanding my brain doing that. My brain expansion and my information expansion is helping not only myself, but it's also benefiting the people who come to see me, right? And to some degree, you folks here who are listening to these podcasts. So that's a win-win situation. And that's really, you know, what I call smart use of otherwise pathological behavior. And I tell everybody on the planet that walks into my office, if I can do it, I can teach you to do it. But, you know, again, it requires that, oh no, he's going to say it again. That's right. That nasty four-letter, most obscene word in the English language, work. Yeah. Imagine that. But it does. So one of the ways that I get ADHD people to work is to channel that extra energy, particularly if they have the uber hyper component, is to channel it. Do some kind of physical activity with it. Chop wood, you know. Take a weekend trip to the mountains and chop wood. Go hiking. Go mountain biking. You know, get involved in organized sports. Even better, if you have an inclination and any tendencies towards this, get involved in martial arts, because that will teach ADHD people two things that they're sorely lacking in: focus and control, right? Discipline, which 99% of the ADHD people don't have. And I'm not slamming anybody. We just know this, right? And any of you folks who have this, you're laughing, listening to this, going, yeah, no shit. Yeah, I know. You know, ADHD people are usually not very disciplined. So if you're like the norm, you don't have a lot of discipline, you don't have a lot of focus, that's right, why it's called attention deficit, right? Lack of focus, right? So martial arts really train that. They train focus, they train discipline, yet at the same time, they're very, very physical, right? And it also hits to an ADHD person's strengths, because most ADHD people, unlike moi, who is a complete moron in this area, most ADHD people are really good with their body. They're body mechanic, kinesthetic learners. They're hands-on body learners, right, for the most part. And there ain't too many things more hands-on than physical sports, particularly martial arts, right? So that's just a really cool deal for folks. So I try to get folks involved in some kind of athletic activity, whether it's organized, preferably organized, because then they have to learn how to work well with others and take orders from people they may not want to take orders from, the coaches or whatever. And I tell people, look at it as stress management, because you're going to have to do this on the job, okay? So you might as well get used to it now. Might as well get used to taking orders from people that aren't going to say it in a way that you want them to say it, who know more than you do. Shut up and listen to them. Curse them under your breath if you want. Think nasty thoughts and evil, wicked, mean, and nasty things in your head. But do what they tell you. If they're smarter than you are in a particular situation, you don't have to like them. All you have to do is learn from their intelligence and learn from their knowledge. There's been many people that I thought were schmucks, but they were smart schmucks. And I had enough control and knowledge and whatever's to shut my mouth, which is kind of a miracle, and learn from them as much as I could. All right. And I tell everybody I meet, you can learn something from every single person you walk into, even if it's how you don't want to be. So if you have a teacher or a coach or a parent or a friend or whatever, a kid or whatever, and they're not very nice people, one of the lessons that they've taught you is what you never want to do when you're in a similar situation. That's an important lesson. I mean, I joke about it, but I'm serious as a heart attack. That is an important lesson. I learned a lot about what I didn't want to do from watching my parents. And no offense to them, because my parents did the best they could, and many times they were stellar at what they did. And I'm not slamming them, but they're not God. They're like me. They make mistakes. And they did a lot of things I didn't like, right? One thing I learned from them, in some regards, is what to do, but I also learned from them what not to do. And that was very important to me and what I'd never wanted to be like. And most of you have heard me say this before. My father was a complete narcissist, And one of the things I learned is I never wanted to be an asshole like that. No offense when I say that. But, he was not a very nice man. He just wasn't, And now that he's dead, I'm not going to say he's a nice guy now. I don't eulogize people, when they're dead just because they're dead. I don't believe in that. Right, which is going to get to my last part of this podcast, but that's coming. That's what she said. Anyway, the whole thing is you can learn something from folks. And I've had people that I thought were jerks, And one of the things I'll tell you, talking about my dad, speaking of jerks, I'm being a little flip here, but one of the things my dad was a brilliant, brilliant financier. And I'm not kidding. I mean, the man was just a genius when it came to that stuff. And he sure as hell didn't learn it from school because he had a seventh grade education. And I'm not slamming him. That's praise, because the man was uber successful, right? And he had an investment sense about him and a business sense about him that you just don't find too many people who don't have Harvard educations. And I can absolutely attest to the fact that I suck ridiculous chestnuts when it comes to this kind of stuff. I don't know. I have no business acumen whatsoever. I don't know, shit from Shinola when it comes to investments or stocks or any. I mean, I'm like dumber than dog poop when it comes to that stuff. A 30-year-old knows more about this crap than I do. And one of the things I tried to learn from my dad was some of those gifts. And, I picked up some of them, not a lot, but I picked up some of them. And certainly, he had just an amazing ability about him in that regard. And I didn't always like the way he did it. And I didn't always like, him as a person very much. But, the man had a lot to teach me about business and about, various stuff that I just would never have gotten any otherwise. And one of the other things I'll say that was really cool about my dad is, despite his narcissism, he was probably one of the most honest people I think I have ever met, and I'm not joking. I mean, this is a man who found a bag of money, and I'm not exaggerating. I remember this like it was yesterday. I was a little kid, and we walked out of a store that my dad owned, and we were going home. He was taking me home and driving home to mom, and somebody had dropped a what do you call it, like a deposit bag that you take deposit checks and money to the bank. And the bag had just boatloads of money in it. I mean, it was just, I don't know how much money it was in there, but it was several thousand dollars at least. And, you know, that was like big, big money back in the day. And my dad walked in and took the money and found it and said, oh, my God, somebody dropped this. And, you know, it was open so you could see the money in it. My eyes got really big. And I'm thinking to myself, woohoo, you know. And my dad's like, oh, no, we don't play that game. Uh-uh. No. Here's what we do when we find things, right? And he took it inside to the manager and said, hey, if you ever see this customer coming in, yada, 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 you know. And as we were pulling out, this guy flew in to the car and ran in, and Dad pulled back in because we figured this was the guy, and it was, in fact, the guy that had dropped the thing. And he was thanking my father and tried to pay him a reward and all this kind of crap. And my dad's like, no, thanks, but, you know, and he's right. My reward was doing the right thing and knowing that you got your money and that I was an honest person. And that's something I will tell you to this day, probably one of the greatest lessons I learned from my father in a positive way was, you know, honesty. There's no compromising it. And I have to say, for somebody who had narcissistic personality disorder, that was like beyond a miracle. He's like one of the only narcissists I think I've ever met who was that honest. It was just amazing when it came to that kind of stuff. And I really, really respected him for that. So you don't have to like somebody necessarily or be in love with them or think they're the greatest thing since sliced bread to learn something from them. Right. I also learned from my dad how I never wanted to treat people when I got mad at them. So he was a great lesson for me. My mom had taught me I don't want to be crazy with my anxiety like she was and cause herself to have, you know, trans ischemic attacks and be a functioning vegetable, which is essentially what she is now. And again, I'm not slamming my mom. My mom's a sweetie and she and I are very, very close. But she has brought a lot of this crap on herself by eating like crap. Like all the things I tell you guys not to do, not taking vitamins, and you can bet your bippy that I harassed the crap. I mean, I encouraged her a lot over about 20 or 30 years to change her ways, and she chose not to do that, and so here we are. And it's just really sad because I think, as you've heard me say before on these podcasts, and I'm not joking, my mom had 10 IQ points on me, and that was something. And I'm not bragging, but I've got a really substantial IQ, and my mom is a lot more substantial and can spell like a banshee, which I can't do if my life depended on it, and could also tell right from left, which I can't do either. You know, I'm just like, oh my God, I'm having to think about it for too long, and by this time I've passed the intersection. It's pretty sad, actually. But at any rate, so, you know, if you've got pathology, you can find ways to channel it. And one of the things that I teach ADHD people or try to encourage them to do is to find ways to use the hyperactivity that they have. Find opportunities to get more structure, to get more control, to get more discipline. And martial arts are a great way to do that. Organized sports are a great way to do that. But, you know, if all you want is to get some of the energy out, play soccer, go swimming, go running, you'll lose weight, you'll tone your body, you'll help your cardiovascular, and you'll burn off that excess energy. So then when you have to do that boring stuff called homework that most ADHD people hate doing, I'm not always wild about it myself, right? You're going to go home and do it because you'll be too tired to, like, avoid doing it, right? But you have to eat right. I mean, there's all kind of things you can do that don't involve taking medication. And so in that regard, I really salute this article and, you know, the people who abide by that, whether you're French, German, Greek, Jewish, whatever, I think that's a really cool thing to do. And anything you can do naturally and holistically, I think, is a much more preferred avenue. But it does require a lot of work. And, of course, it requires, you know, time and patience and organization skills, which most ADHD people don't have very much of. But, you know, that's why you see some schmuck like me, who is OC as hell, that I can show you how to do that. And you may not like it, but it'll enhance your life. And it'll give you all kinds of cool skills, and it'll give your brain something to do while you're giving your body something to do. And it's just a really cool deal. Eating better, exercising, those are just majorly good things. And as most of you know, who know any ADHD people, like addicts, they have some of the worst dietary practices on the frickin' planet. So, you know, if you've got a biochemical issue, whether it's, you know, schizophrenia or whatever, you got to help your brain out, and you can help it out by taking medication, or you can help it out by doing other things. You know, it's up to you. So, and sort of the last thing I wanted to bitch about, again, without calling any names, is about this sense that we want to eulogize people after they're dead, and we want to praise people, and we want to ignore, you know, the fact that they had tons of faults, you know, and we want to, and when we get mad, I mean, I, and there's a lot of famous people I could name who I won't, in deference to their living relationships, who are still around. They're kin, so to speak. They're kin folk, so to speak. And I'm from the South, so I can slam it all I want. Thank you. I think most of you folks know I'm making fun of it, right? Not seriously, but you know, got to joke about your shit. It's better than crying about it, okay? But, you know, there are a lot of very famous figures that we make into heroes. And it, frankly, I find it repulsive and irritating as fuck. And it just really gets under my skin that we do that. And there's several folks I could name that people would be gasping and going, oh my God, and, you know, sending me all kind of nasty letters and all this kind of good junk. So I will, in deference to my own sanity and safety, what little I have left, and in deference to the living relatives of those folks who are still around, who I'm sure love them regardless of their misanthropic behaviors. There's plenty of very famous people I could name who have a very sordid history, and we just seem to ignore all that stuff, right? And I will give you one example because I don't know any of these person's relatives, and I'm sure they're far enough removed from this person that I hope not to catch hell about it, and certainly they are not responsible for their misanthropic relatives' ideas, right? But, you know, one of the things we do in this country is we like to eulogize people for one or two things and then forget all the other crap they did. And we are selective about it because some people we want to misanthropically slam because they do something that isn't socially fashionable right now, like racism or prejudice. And I'm not slamming anybody because that's not a good thing, period. I don't care what era you live in or what race or sex or whatever you are, so don't mishear me. But there's people who were prejudicial jerks who also did some really cool things in their life to advance society or culture or whatever. They were just, you know, prejudicial, you know, sons of biscuit eaters, whether they were anti, you know, homosexual or anti-heterosexual or anti-white or anti-black or anti, you know, Semitic or whatever. And I'm not, you know, saying any of those things are a good thing because they're not. But let's not forget the good things we do. And if we're going to slam these people for some of their misanthropic ideas, how come we're still putting other people on a pedestal who clearly had misanthropic things that they did? You know, Christopher Columbus being amongst them. All right, so go look at an honest history of Christopher Columbus and look at the crazy things he did to the native people in the lands that where he landed. So to start off with, you know, the only reason that he called Indians in this country Indians is because he thought he'd landed in India, right? So right off the bat, we got a problem. But go read some of the stuff he did. I mean, now, did he discover a new world? Well, yeah. Should we acknowledge that? Well, hell yes, we should. But let's not ignore the other stuff. So if you want to praise him for that stuff and say, yeah, but you know what? He was kind of an asshole. Okay, but don't eulogize him and ignore that stuff and then slam somebody else because they're racist or prejudicial or an embezzler or whatever. And maybe they started, you know, I don't know, they started the U.S. postal system or they started, you know, they invented the guitar or whatever. I'm just making this up, okay? So, you know, you can't selectively eulogize people that just it's socially fashionable because you want to eulogize them and slam the shit out of everybody else because they, you know, espoused a belief system that's socially unpopular right now. So, you know, and the other example I have in my head that's real easy to come up with is Ben Franklin. And I personally have a lot of problems with Ben Franklin because in my personal opinion, he was an immoral asshole. You know, I don't know if you guys know that. Go back and look at how many illegitimate people he had, kids he had in France alone when he was the American ambassador over there. It's something like 27 or 28 illegitimate kids in France alone. Okay, so don't be telling me what a great man that is, and he's going up, stuffing all these French women out and having all these kids out of wedlock and not accepting responsibility or any of that kind of stuff. This guy would be fried on a, you know, over a pit today, right? And I just... He's just got one of those auras, energies, personalities, whatever that I just have never liked. I've just got it's my personal thing, and you know, you folks certainly don't need to have that. I'm not suggesting the man didn't invent some cool stuff and have some great sayings and stuff, because absolutely he did. But my point being, if you're going to remember him for, you know, Poor Richard's Almanac and all this kind of good stuff and the kite and the electricity thing and all that kind of junk, that's fine. Don't forget all the stupid shit he did and the unethical stuff he did, too. You can't waste those. You can't say, oh, we'll just overlook those, right? Because if you do that, you have to overlook the other stuff that people are doing nowadays that people are getting slammed and want to tear their statues down and move statues out of the state house and all this kind of crap because they did X, Y, Z. And you want to minimize all the other stuff, the good stuff they did. I'm sorry, that doesn't work. So you're either going to slam somebody totally for the bad stuff they do, which is going to knock out about 90% of our heroes in this country. Can't speak for other foreign countries, but I can definitely speak for this country. You're going to eliminate about 90% of your heroes, our so-called heroes, right? So if you and you can't selectively slam one person because of their misanthropic ideas and ignore their good stuff while you're ignoring the bad stuff of people that are just, you know, currently fashionable to praise. So, you know, come on, guys and gals. Let's wake up and get honest here. You know, we all have faults. We all have good stuff, right? I have more faults than I can count. I also have some good things. So you can't wipe me out because I'm weird, or you can't just say, oh, well, we're not going to look at this stuff because he's a genius. Well, no, I'm sorry. I have fucked up stuff too. Okay. So when you're looking at somebody, you're evaluating somebody, you don't have to like them. You don't have to accept them. But you do have to recognize that they have strengths and they have gifts, and we can learn from that. And then we can take the stuff that they do that we don't like, and we can learn from that and make a vow to ourselves not to repeat those same kinds of things, not to do the same kind of patterns that the people we don't like are doing, right? We can learn from them. And that's a gift they give us, whether they meant to give it to us or not. It's a gift, but we have to have eyes to see it, and we have to have minds to interpret it, and we have to be open to it, right? So please, folks, don't just praise somebody because you like them or because it's socially fashionable or because they died, now they're a great person. No, I'm sorry. That doesn't work for me, and it shouldn't work for you either, right? Okay, so I've done my ranting. I feel better now.
I'm feeling much better now.
To quote one of my famous lines from one of my favorite movies, The Sixth Sense. Gotta love Haley Joel Osment's performance in that movie. Oh, my God. But that's another day. I'm kind of a movie freak, too. But, you know, I'm just a freak, okay? So just get over it. At least I know it, and I'm not trying to fool anybody, least of all myself. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope I haven't bored you too badly with my rants and raves. I just have to do this every now and then. And certainly I did talk about some things that I think were important, such as holding on to your core beliefs, and reorganizing your priorities. If money is important to you, and so is your sanity, you have to decide which is more important. Sometimes you can't have both, right? And if you have a disorder or you have a condition, whether it's high blood pressure or ADHD or OCPD or whatever, right, you can change that without medication. But you got to be very, very diligent. And go find out what you need to do. There's plenty of places you can find information from, right, that you can learn and adapt and find something that fits your lifestyle and fits your stuff. And finally, if you're a person who likes to eulogize people when they're dead, shame on you. If they were jerks when they were alive, they're jerks when they're dead. If they were good people when they were alive, they're good people when they're dead. And most of us have both good aspects and bad aspects. And so what I say is, let's remember the good stuff. Let's not overemphasize it, but let's not overemphasize the negative stuff either. Now, despite that, you're going to find people you don't like, regardless of how quote-unquote good they are or whatever, and that's okay too. But you got to acknowledge their strengths, even if you hate them. Even if you'd really, really find just their image of their face to be disgusting, you know, to you, as I do a lot of folks in our society that are so-called famous and, you know, revered. You cannot ignore their contributions. And most folks have something good that they've done. So let's not overemphasize the negative, but let's not ignore the negative either. And if you're going to overemphasize the positive in one person, you got to apply rules to everybody. You can't selectively apply rules that you like and don't like for differing people because of whatever factors, random factors you decide to pick. Have a good one, and I will try to make another podcast. Probably I've got upcoming medical procedures that I have to get done very soon, so I will probably try to get a podcast during my recovering period, which will be in about a week and a half. So hold your horses. I'll be back. another one of my favorite lines. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and I hope you learned something other than the guy's weird, because you knew that from the first podcast, so you didn't need to listen to 25 podcasts to figure that stuff out, right? Have a good 2014. I hope everybody gets the life that they want more so and less of the life they don't want. And remember, your happiness is largely in your own hands, and your life is certainly for the most part in your own hands. Decisions you make can have profound impacts not only on your life, but on the life of others. Don't ever forget it, unless you're a hermit. Thanks. Be well always. And remember always to take your power. Recognize your power and take it. Don't let somebody else take it from you. and don't give it to them. Peace.